Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up. It's Monday, February 9th, 2026. And my name is Magnus Teeveld. I'm your host for this hour. And joining me in the studio today is
Peter R.H.
And we've got a bunch of stuff lined up for you. It is Black History Month, and we have a Black History Month feature. We'll be bringing you that as our second story. And we'll also... we also have a couple other stories we're going to be featuring, including one about an advocacy group seeking to put controls similar to what we've seen in Australia on access to social media for youth, based on some serious concerns about what social media use and overuse does, the effect it has on young people. We have a report from our own Danny Nesvadarani about a new West bookstore and its efforts to raise some money to stay in business with a very clever and fun fundraising scheme. And Peter's here. What are you going to be talking about today?
Nikola Tesla and kind of debunking there's this notion that some people think that what is being banned is this free energy, that he had invented a way to just get energy out of the air and so on. And I'm going through what was the true achievements of him. What it relies on, he thought the Earth had this electrical resonance. The whole Earth had that.
Mm-hmm.
And the Earth basically does not have it. So he thought, resonance? Is that what it is?
Resonance?
Yeah.
Is that the word you're looking?
Electrical resonance.
Resonance.
And that's at Wildcliff Park, where he had that... major thing that was financed by J.P. Morgan, and J.P. Morgan stopped financing it. But it basically was based on that theory, so which has been proven wrong. So a few other things I'll bring up.
Terrific. We're going to start off with a listen to interview about the effects that social media has on youth, particularly young people. Australia recently enacted a law restricting social media access to kids under 16, and we're going to talk to someone from Unplugged Canada about why they feel we should do the same thing here in Canada.
This is a CJY News update. A local nonprofit group is calling on parents and youth to be aware of the harmful effects of their cell phones, devices, and social media. Caroline Solu is a leader of the Nanaimo chapter for Unplugged Canada. She started the chapter last fall after reading about the harms that early access to social media can have on children and youth.
Statistically speaking, it's something like 8 hours a day that the average teenager spends in front of a screen, and 5 to 6 hours of that on social media. And then it kind of leads to the question, like, what are they actually not doing? If they're spending that much time on these devices, they're not, like, that's a full-time job. They're not doing hobbies. They're not interacting in person with their friends. They're not, you know, developing social, emotional skills that are needed to be successful in the world. So it's kind of taking over childhood in a way.
Soilu, a mother of two, says this topic is personal for her. While she hasn't allowed her two daughters, grades 1 and 5, to have their own cell phones, as her kids get older, she has seen the increase that other children have in accessing phones. As social media is fueling what Unplugged Canada is calling a youth mental health crisis, the nonprofit is currently advocating for the federal government to place a mandatory age restriction on social media sites like Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, and Discord.
So if you're spending all your time on social media, your brain is actually wiring for that. Whereas it could be wiring for learning an instrument or being social with your friends or, you know, other more healthy habits that traditionally kids were doing when they were young.
Unplug Canada advocates for legislation similar to that recently made in Australia. At the end of last year, the Australian government placed a ban on youth under the age of 16 from accessing social media. The first legislation of its kind made major social media sites ban or deactivate accounts for those under 16. As well, no new accounts can be made for those under 16.
I think it will be most beneficial for the kids that aren't yet on those platforms because it sets a new norm where we're like, okay, we're telling parents, we're telling people that it's not healthy for kids to be on social media and that we should wait. And I think that will cause a cultural shift eventually that will benefit the kids that are not on it yet.
Outside of advocacy work for legislation, Soy Lou says their work at Unplug Canada is to encourage parents to look at delaying their children's access to their own cell phones until they are 14 years old.
So one, we're not anti-tech. We're not saying that kids shouldn't be on technology at all. We're trying to kind of tackle the most harmful aspects of technology. So what has been found to be most harmful is the smartphones, because the smartphones are in your pocket. You're carrying them around all the time with you. It leads to this compulsive checking. Kids feel like they have to constantly take out their phone and check. It's the distraction as well.
Stephen Leonard is a student at Vancouver Island University and is researching the effects of social media.
Social media has a lot of harmful effects that affect people across the developmental lifespan. And I'm kind of diving into how to advocate for change against these harmful effects of social media, specifically towards children and adolescents, as well as adults.
Leonard is in his fourth year of a Bachelor's of Arts degree in psychology and is in the honors program. He recently started volunteering with Unplug Canada. He says his interest in his research came after observing youth being so heavily attached to their phones.
Because I think it's a great cause to kind of raise awareness for and to make change to protect these youth who are so at risk of experiencing many harmful effects from social media, and maybe not specifically social media, but like everything that has to do with social media, such as cybercrime, cyberbullying, social comparisons, and then obviously compulsive use, and etc.
Leonard himself is part of the generation that grew up with social media as it was starting to become popular.
And I mean, as we know, like a lot of the social media sites today require a minimum age limit of 13. If I'm correct, if not mistaken, I definitely accessed it before then, and I think a lot of people do.
He says since around 2012, research has shown a massive decrease in life satisfaction for youth and a massive increase in depression, anxiety, and suicidal behaviors. While he's in support of Unplug Canada's call to delay cell phones and social media access to certain ages, he says protecting children from online harm starts with education at home.
And by educating our audiences, by becoming aware of all this, parents can do their own due diligence of restricting their children, creating healthy boundaries, educating the children themselves, because I think a lot of the time, adults give children a hard time and kind of treat them like kids. They are, absolutely, but I think they're a lot smarter than we actually think, right? We got to give them the benefit of the doubt. We got to give them the chance and educate them, right? And we'd be surprised, I think, of what they can do and what they can know.
Leonard does say, while there are many harms that come from social media use, he does say that social media isn't necessarily all bad.
Social media can be very beneficial as well, perhaps at a young age, maybe not as much, but I mean, you can go on there and connect with your friends. You can stay up to date on certain things in your life and the news. And although, again, that's maybe not for children, but there are benefits too, right? There's pros and cons to everything in life. It's just a healthy moderation, which is absolutely important.
Parents and guardians can find how to join a local chapter, along with educational resources on teaching youth healthy habits for social media use and the risks of early access can be found on Unplug Canada's website, unplugcanada.ca. For C2Y News, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
And thanks to our friends at CHLY for that report. Now we're moving on to a local story about a Groove Cat Books and their efforts to trade up from an item of real no consequence up to something that'll help them stay in business.
Can I just weigh in on something? What about email? That ban in Australia, does that include email?
I don't believe so.
Okay,
I guess it's really just, you know, the social media, different platforms and stuff.
Okay, I just wanted to.
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of the concern is that, you know, almost all the social media platforms are intentionally designed to be kind of addictive in the sense, you know, in how they operate, which you can I don't necessarily think of email as addictive. I think most people eventually get frustrated and annoyed. And
so Facebook, which is yesterday's man, is sort of that social media, but
and Instagram and TikTok and
okay, but I don't think Facebook is sort of. I just got email and Facebook. That's it.
That's because you're old, Peter. None of the young folks like Facebook anymore.
And so are you.
They're all on Instagram. Yes, that's true. They're all on Instagram and TikTok and who know, you know, places like that.
I know, but just anyway.
Apparently there's a class action court case that is trying to get underway against TikTok because of the negative effects of its addictive algorithm, and I guess that'll be interesting to follow that case and see where that goes. You know, one of the things about almost all the social media companies and social media in general since its inception is they've all pretty effectively been able to almost entirely avoid any kind of serious regulation or oversight. I think the Europeans have done a little bit, but for the most part, they just kind of do what they want without anyone really, without any checks and balances into whether what they're doing is positive. So, anyway, let's get on to this report. This is from Danny Nesvadarani and about a local bookstore and its efforts to raise some money to stay in business.
Reporting from New Westminster, BC, this is Danny Nesvadarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Groove Cat Books and Records is a local business in New Westminster, BC, facing what can be described as increasingly common economic challenges that are being seen by many small businesses throughout the Lower Mainland and British Columbia. The store's owners, as well as husband and wife team, John and Kat Hughes, haven't been shy about this fact, and have now found a unique way to hopefully sustain Groove Cat through the support of their community. Inspired by the One Red Paperclip project that led to a series of exchanges that started with a paperclip and ended with a house, they decided to create their own sort of red paperclip challenge titled the Groove Cat Barter Challenge, starting with the exchange of a single cat-shaped paperclip. The goal of the challenge is to see if they're able to exchange upwards to an item that would financially aid their business. To learn more about the challenge, as well as what has been exchanged so far, CJSF took a trip down to Groove Cat Books and Records. We spoke with John Hughes about the project, as well as the store's current situation.
I mean, essentially, since we started here, we've had some great support from people in New Westminster. We love the community. We love the people who come to our shop. It's very difficult to make bills every month, especially with the rents climbing. And we're stuck with something called a triple net lease, which makes it such that we're responsible not only for a base rent, but for random maintenance costs, which can be billed to us really at any time, and we're to the tune of $2,500 last April, as well as paying property taxes on property that we don't own. And so we're kind of at the mercy of what those rates are like. And it really last year nearly torpedoed us. We very nearly went under. And so we thought, you know what? We love what we do. We love the community. Let's try this and see where it goes. See if we can make sort of trade up, and people are well aware that, you know, they're contributing with all of this, and it's not simply something that we're orchestrating in a vacuum. What we're attempting to do here is to be able to trade so that we can, you know, make something of value that ultimately we'd perhaps be able to auction or trade for cash so that we can make some back bills and continue going forward. It's a bit of a trouble ahead, trouble behind kind of a scenario right now. But I think the part that makes us unique in what we do with our particular challenge is that because we're not just a bookstore, we're also a publishing arm. We're a Cosmic Cranium Press. We've published a couple of books. We would want to create a third one. We don't even have a working title for it right now, but basically the idea is that we would, once we've been able to barter for the cost of printing and editing the book, we would create a book about this entire process. Proceeds from the sale of that book would go to help out vulnerable populations here in New Westminster, of which there are many. And so as far as I know, that's not been done before. I could be wrong about that, but I've not been able to find it anywhere. So I believe that that makes us unique as far as where this challenge is meant to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not just about sustaining this business, but also uplifting the community as well, giving back in that sense.
Absolutely. Without the community, we're nothing, and that means everybody in the community. And yes, a hand up for people who might be struggling right now is really important for us to engage in. We don't exist in a vacuum here, quite obviously. Everybody who is in this community matters, and we want to do everything we can to help them out, and hopefully this process can achieve that to some end.
Could you talk a bit about the trades that have been made so far?
Sure, yeah. I mean, we began with a single red paperclip. Well, actually, yeah, it was red. It was cat-shaped paperclip and a bookmark. So cash value pretty close to zero. A very generous author, a man named Brian Antonsen, who I've known for quite some time, saw our post, and he is a best-selling author. He's got a book called Slumax Gold, which is selling very well. He signed a copy of it and agreed to exchange it for the paperclip. From the paperclip, we swapped it for a designer handbag valued at around $200. From a bit of a mystery woman. We had her phone number and now we don't, and we've tried to track her down online, and yeah, anyway, hopefully she comes in to check in on the mm-hmm. process at some point, because that was a very generous donation that she made, and her name was Diane. That's all I can remember about her. Anyway, another local person who'd actually moved to the community just this last summer, her name is Kelly, had a copy of Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale, first edition, signed, which she exchanged for the coach bag. I mean, this is an extremely generous offer. I mean, looking at the value in terms of cash, what we've seen online with it, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,000 to $1,500. And that's where it sits at the moment. We've tried to do a few promotions to try and move that along. I understand that is a fairly, it's a big ask to try and sort of pole vault over the value of around, you know, somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500. People would have to think very long and hard about how to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of there. That's kind of where things sit at the moment as far as the trades go.
I'm really curious about this book that you were talking about. In my head, the way you describe it is like each chapter would sort of be describing the experience and the sort of personal aspects of each trade.
I think that's kind of the minutia of it. I mean, yes, I would want to detail as much of that as possible. I think bigger picture, what we're looking at is this entire structure that we're looking at economically, socially, culturally at the moment is failing a lot of people. There's so much need out there. And the fact that since the pandemic, the number of homeless people in this community has proliferated, that is absolutely not good enough. People deserve a home. The community of New Westminster deserves to have a bustling main street of shops which have meaning and cultural significance to them. these are the reasons that I want to tell the story about this book through this book. And so, yes, well, the individual trades, I'm sure there'll be some touching on, you know, I did this because X, Y, and Z. You know, everybody has their own reasons. I'm not going to put words in anybody's mouth. My sense so far is they believe in the cultural significance of the bookshop here and the support for local artists and authors and musicians, et cetera, that we offer here, as well as the need to help out those who are really struggling right now without a roof over the head or enough to eat. That simply is not good enough to live in a society where there's plenty and people are still struggling to get their basic needs met. So it's we have to be careful not to try and do too much in a book like this. But the point being that I feel that these ideas are very tightly linked. The notion that a place that is, it's got books, it's got music, it's got art, and the people who form the community as a whole, not everyone is seeing their needs met. I feel like if that wholeness, if that approach is taken on the whole and discussed in a way that links them in a way that is cogent and uses evidence that shows that these ideas are completely linked and not distinct from one another, then that I think will be the pressure point of the book for people who are looking at it and perhaps have positions of power who can make changes, as well as giving the book the significance that it likely could have and the legitimacy that it requires.
Yeah, it's all sort of like intersectional in a way, right? How can a small business sustain if the community that it resides in is struggling in the way that it is?
Precisely. I mean, you know, sure, that's not across the board. I mean, like anything in life, some are having an easier go of it than others, and that's just the way things are. However, at the end of the day, I don't think any of us have the right to simply write off those who are not doing well, and that's no matter how people got there, to simply say I'm comfortable and leave it at that. Again, I've said this phrase a few times here, not good enough. It's not good enough for people who don't have enough to just ignore them. And we're hoping that this process can be helpful in that regard.
Mm-hmm. You know, this Red Paperclip Challenge isn't just for Groove Cat, it's for the community.
That is what we have in mind. Yeah, I mean, and this isn't to disparage anybody who does a challenge similarly for their own reasons. I can't pretend to know what somebody's reasons are for doing something like this. My understanding is that the Red Paperclip Challenge has been done many, many times. I mean, who wouldn't want to try something like that if there was some a way to make it go for whatever ends you choose to achieve? For us, it's about staying power here in New West, this community that we love so much, as well as wanting to look out for people that were, even though we're struggling right now, there are people who are struggling harder and worse and having a harder time. And for us to be able to, if we can do anything to help those people, people in our community who are meaningful and citizens here, then yes, we will do what we can to help make their lives to improve their lives as much as we possibly can. And I don't want to sound like I'm some kind of parachuting in do-gooder here. It is a process of wholeness and wanting to look out for people who might need a hand up.
Mm-hmm. I believe those were the main questions I had regarding this barter challenge. Thank you so much for taking the time. But if there's anything else regarding this challenge or anything going on at Groove Cat that you want people to know about, what would that be?
Well, I will say that it was really cool to hold in my hands a copy, a first edition of The Handmaid's Tale, a book that is, I mean, come back in an enormous way over the past few years, in a book that Margaret Atwood herself signed. Really cool experience, you know, perhaps Canada's best known and most talented author of all time. That's been really cool. I mean, Sure. There are lots of things going on at Groove Cat Books and Records and our publishing arm, Cosmic Cranium Press. I'll hold off on turning it into some kind of a commercial for it. Though I will throw this out there. A plug for our book, Canada is Not the 51st Effing State, which we released in October and had a major signing event here at the store for many of the contributors. We signed, I think there were probably 7 or 8 of us who signed it. It's a book of, I think, 10 essays, 11 essays. And we signed the book and sent it to Donald Trump at the White House. We've not yet heard back from him, which is kind of strange. I thought by now we would have had a clear and cogent response from the White House, but still waiting. So there's that.
Once again, that was our conversation with John Hughes, co-owner of Groove Cat Books and Records in New Westminster, BC. We spoke about the Groove Cat Barter Challenge, their take on a red paperclip exchange, which has so far rewarded them with a first edition signed copy of The Handmaid's Tale. We will make sure to update all of you as soon as another exchange occurs. This has been Danny Nesvetterani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This interview would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. Author and illustrator Becca Rowland likes to keep an eye out for cardinals. Her mom loves them and is pretty good at finding them, too. Becca didn't know how she did it until they realized their mom was birding by ear.
She was visiting me one day and a bird was singing in a tree and her whole body went on alert and she was like, there is a cardinal. And she looked around until she could find it. And I realized that I had no idea what a cardinal sounded like. So I made it my mission to learn so that I could then tell my mother that I had found her favorite bird.
At first, Becca looked to field guides for help identifying the songs of her neighborhood birds, like blue jays. But technical descriptions like harsh, grating, and shrill never quite clicked.
But if I told you that if it sounds like a rusty hinge being moved back and forth, that's a blue jay.
They learned to connect new birds with familiar sounds.
It had to be a real sound that I could describe to a person and they would know what it is in their head. And it was just my brain's way of making sense of these random noises that I was hearing.
Becca compiled their hilariously accurate ways to identify birds in the new book, Bird Talk. Now, when Becca hears a bird that sounds like a siren going off, she knows to look for her mom's favorite bird, the Northern Cardinal. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
And we are CJSF 90.1 FM coming to you from the top of Burnaby Mountain here at Simon Fraser University. And this is Speak Up, coming to you every Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 10 a.m. on CJSF. On Wednesdays at 10 a.m. we get Intravenous. And actually also nowadays, Fridays at 10 a.m. we also get a reprise edition of Speak Up. Some of the best recent stories get compiled and replayed there. So tune in every weekday from 10 a.m. In about 10 minutes, actually more like 14 minutes, you're going to tell us
about Nikola Tesla and
an infinite power.
No, well, that's not. Some people claim that to this very day.
Yeah.
But I'm just going to be as I said, it's the idea of the Earth had, which it doesn't. He thought the Earth had electrical resonance.
Yeah,
which is not true. So he did something at Wycliffe Park that was financed by J.P. Morgan that. It was based on this idea to do wireless energy, electricity, actually. But interesting enough, it was coal energy was what was generating it. So, I mean, it wasn't like that. it was the idea that you have it through the air instead of by wiring. But what he was doing was not really the creation of free energy. But I guess he thought it could be